It's 7 minutes after 10. I'm Kara Lawrence. Joining me in the studio today is a celebrated composer, pianist, and author named Kenny Werner, who is a special guest for the Western Invitational Jazz Festival, which gets underway tonight with a concert featuring Mr. Werner and the Western Jazz Quartet. And along here today as well is University Professor of Jazz Saxophone, Andrew Rathbun. Thank you for joining us this morning, gentlemen.
Thanks for having us, Kara.
Yeah.
Thank you. We're going to be previewing several events, including tonight's concert. I should say it starts at 8 o'clock in the Dalton Center Recital Hall. And tomorrow night, with an expanded group of jazz players, the jazz orchestra on stage with Kenny Werner. And tickets are available for these events. They're through the Miller Auditorium box office or 387-2300. Kenny Werner, it's an honor to meet you. I've almost made the mistake of reading too much about your life to even know where to begin. I know you're living in New York. I think you grew up there. You went to the Berklee School of Music, where a very refreshing teacher came your way and showed a new path through the very rigid, formal way of training that worked much better for you, and your life took on a whole new path through that, and some years in Brazil, I believe. And just a couple of weeks ago, I had somebody on the air who mentioned you, saying that they listened to your meditations, which is based on a practice of teaching that resulted in a book and your meditations. And I feel like I'm not sure where to begin in this whirlwind of accomplishment.
Well, the two teachers you talked about, one in Boston, was Madame Shaloff. She was a sort of a legendary teacher. Other people thought that as well. Not everybody subscribed to it. You know, it wasn't really a knock against a traditional training. It was more like, where is your intention? You know, what are you doing? What is this an expression of? So it was almost like spiritual practice, but at the instrument. And I was very hungry for that, because traditional modes of study never worked for me, just because I was lazy. Not that this was a fast way or something, but in other words, I never felt like, you know, banging my head against the wall trying to get a bunch of stuff together. I wanted to find a way of having meaningful and finding a meaningful way of doing things. And that really infused me with, like, she even used to come and have me walk around the room. How am I walking? You know, what do I have? Is the spirit embodied in me while I'm walking? Then it was about, and the first thing that influenced my touch was this idea of the arms defying gravity and the finger dropping from a place where it is so in harmony with the way the body moves, that it feels like somebody's actually, not today I reflect back on it, if I'm even doing it right, you know, what she was showing me. We worked on one note for 6 months. Dropping one note, dropping the finger on one note, and she would say, get that ton of bricks off my piano. I just dropped my finger, you know, and it was like, if you ever read Zen and the Art of Archery, it was very much like that. You know, the guy took 2 years to learn how to hold the bow, you know, to become the instrument that plays the instrument, so to speak. I think this is what I took from it today, you know. So that just redirected me. And then the guy in Brazil was coming from a very different place. He had had a nervous breakdown trying to, you know, live that classical ethic. And he had come back and just was dropping five fingers on the instrument as a way of getting in without the tension and getting in without the self, you know, beating up, self-flagellate, whatever the word is. You know.
Yeah.
I don't know. Is it
flagellation?
Flagellation. Okay, I don't want to make it the other word. You know, he was 2 years into it, and he was really in a good place, and he played so effortlessly that watching him was just, I didn't understand it. You know, how could you commit so much technique, and it just seems like your body's in motion. That's all I'm feeling, you know. So those two formulated something for me that for the next 10 years I used as a way to get in. Like, first I would start from that place, and then I'd find myself practicing some stuff And then if I started to put too much pressure on myself, I knew it because I stopped practicing. That was my MO before that. Never practiced, you know. And then I'd have to come back to what I now call the first step, just dropping my fingers on the keys and getting in that space. And then from there, a door would open. Why don't you just work on this little thing over here? And, you know, and it, you know, it was years later that I started to tell people. Well, what happened is that over the first 10 years, it created a very effortless technique that people started to ask me about. Say, man, you look so relaxed. Even if I didn't feel relaxed, it still looked like that. And so I would start to explain it. And next thing you know, some private lessons and then a couple of classes and workshops. And then I gave a talk at the International Jazz Educators Convention. And then the secret was out. They were sending tapes all around to people. And then I was being invited to speak, which was crazy. You know, I was like a musician. I just wanted to play, you know. But I seemed to know something. It synthesized, those two teachers synthesized through me into something which eventually became, you know, the book Effortless Mastery. But that was after years of teaching it without even, it didn't even have a title. In fact, that wasn't even my title. I had written before that a few articles for like wellness magazines about this stuff. And one of the editors titled the article Effortless Mastery. And when I did the book, I said, you know, that's an outstanding name. That name has some light to it. And then I had that traditional fear, oh, but my friends will make fun of that title, you know. And I said, you know, for once, don't do something for those 12 guys that, you know, you're always writing music for. You know, the problem with jazz musicians, they're writing music for about 15 people that they want to admire it instead of thinking about humans, you know. And it took, you know, and the same thing with the title. Well, what will those guys think? I said, the heck with that. This is for the world. It's not for those guys, you know. And the other point you touched on, what was it? Oh, about the meditations. Well, I would find myself talking students or even classes into the space. Like what I call it is a space beyond, you know, instead of being in your conscious mind, the basic principle is you get in the space, and then what you receive in the space or where you go from the space doesn't have any self-criticism in it at all, or else you're not in the space, you're back in your head. So it's learning to, and with music, I've always done that very well. At least with music, you know. So I would start to talk people into it by, imagine this, you know. Actually, in Sanskrit, they call the word dharana. I realized that many years later. You know, an image that would sort of take them into this place. And the funny thing is, the reason there's a meditation CD is not because I felt like I'm a meditation teacher or anything. When I wrote the book, it was, a lot of it started with a transcription of a three-day clinic I did for the Danish Musicians Union, where I used all my licks. Now, at this point now, you know, 8 years into teaching, I knew all the potent things to touch on in the context of, a three-day residency or whatever. Mm-hmm. And so I just got them out. We recorded them with the specific idea of writing a book, starting with that transcription. So what happened was, there was three or four times I led them in meditations, and that went into the book. And Jamie Abesol, the producer of the book, said, well, you have to make a CD, because a lot of his books have CDs in them, but this didn't need a CD, of those meditations. And I said, why? He said, well, because in each one of those meditations, they're reading them, the first sentence is, close your eyes. So if they close their eyes, how are they going to read the rest of the meditation?
That's a good point he made.
Yeah, that's the only reason I made the CD. And I find out there are people who have been using that CD for years.
Yeah.
So it's kind of overwhelming.
I listened to it on YouTube, actually.
Yeah, I mean, yeah. It wasn't something I really had a lot of intention of doing. It just welled up within me, this knowledge. And I started to share it when someone asked me a question.
Yeah. My guest is Kenny Werner, who's a jazz pianist and so much more, composer, arranger, author, and he's appearing tonight and tomorrow night at Western Michigan University for the Western Invitational Jazz Festival, which kicks off tonight with a concert where he'll be joined by members of the Western Jazz Quartet, one of whom is Andrew Rathbun. Do you have a prior relationship with Mr. Werner?
Yeah, we met at a workshop in Sandpoint, Idaho. I think it was, I'm not sure if it was before Effortless Mastery had come out. It was, yeah. Just to dovetail on what he was saying about, you know, these lectures, just speaking from someone who received some of this information at an early stage, I have these vivid, vivid memories of him speaking about all these different issues that musicians confront, you know, about self-criticism and things of that nature. And it was just one of those light bulb moments. Like, he kept speaking about all these things, like, oh yeah, I do that. Oh yeah, I do that. And it was incredibly impactful. And, you know, it's something that myself and a lot of other people who encountered, you know, these things along the way have taken and sort of also spread to their students, you know, helping them confront some of the things that young musicians have to deal with in terms of practicing and in terms of, you know, accepting what you can and cannot do in a positive way, you know, et cetera, et cetera. I think the other thing, though, that makes it really special that Kenny's doing it is that not only does he have this like really deep philosophy, but he's a really deep musician. I think it would be less impactful if he was not as deep as a musician. Do you know what I mean? Like, it's one reason why everyone takes him so seriously is because when he sits down at the piano and plays, it's incredible. So it makes the message more powerful in a lot of ways, because there's a lot of sort of people who are in the self-help business who it's very hard to take them seriously because they just don't have anything more to offer but their sort of vapid message. But this is a really deep message that is belied by his incredible gifts as a musician and as a composer.
Kenny, you have, I counted almost 40 albums over the years as a leader in which, you know, you're the main composer and the first name on the record. That's a lot of music output. Another thing that really stood out to me in the reading I did was the quality of your long-term relationships. You have friendships that go back a long time. Mm-hmm. And I think that's a wonderful thing to know about a person, that there are relationships that have lasted lifetimes in your history.
That's a nice thought. Yeah, well, there's, I would say my musical life started to make more sense when I went to Berklee. Before that, I was a concert piano major at Manhattan School of Music, and it just was absurd. I didn't care about that music. I mean, not enough to listen to it. I didn't know anything about it. I just got in, you know. And everyone else there, it wasn't a jazz school at the time. It was only a classical school. And I wasn't even a composition major. I just, you know, it just was absurd. But I had the talent to do it, but I had no interest, you know. And therefore, I had no friends. I can't remember a single person I went to school with there. But when I got to Berklee, it wasn't even jazz that I loved, but I was always a natural improviser. And I went to Berklee not because I heard it was a jazz school, but I heard, literally someone said to me, I think they improvise there, like that. And I said, well, yeah, that's what I do, so maybe I should try that. And I actually, the long-term relationships I made with some great musicians that we just seemed to be in each other's lives and on each other's records, you know. But there were some musicians there that I spent a lot of time with that were as confused as I was. And so I felt in my element. These guys don't know exactly why they're here either. And so I felt a little more vindicated. I didn't feel so alone like I did at Manhattan School of Music. I felt like I was the only classical musician that had no idea or interest in what he was doing. You know, and that's a really lonely feeling. So, and some of those guys, yeah, we have a music history and we still, you know, socially, we all feel connected. But particularly when it comes to trios, I've had two main trios, and the first one was like 14 years. And then this one has been like, oh gosh, I mean, pretty soon it'll be 20 years. And it's not that I don't do any other things, but trios are the most personal thing to me for a piano player, at least for me. I don't see them as a piano player with a rhythm section. I see them as a triangle of exchanges of ideas. And it's really hard for me to find some people that will throw ideas at me that I can then orchestrate. That's the way I think of it. And when I find it, I just don't feel the need to change it. You know, I mean, the first trio, we just got to the point where, like, I might be getting there with the second trio too. Like, whatever we're doing, we've done it. We've been doing it, you know. But the thing is, they still want to do gigs. So I say, okay. Because it's great for people to hear this trio. You just hear that night. You don't hear how this evolution to what it got to. And then people are like, what? You know. And I do enjoy that reaction. So it's the most potent thing I can present myself with is as a member of that trio. You know. So, yeah, relationships do tend to last.
The Melody is a recording that came out in 2015, I believe. There's an even newer one called Animal Crackers.
Yeah,
is that also a
there's
trio?
A tune on there called Animal Crackers. I debated whether which one to bring. I don't even know why. Except we are playing a couple of tunes from this one. That's why I brought it. But well, Animal Crackers just came out.
Why don't we hear something from The Melody?
Sure.
And it looks like you're starting off the album with a tune called Try to Remember. And that is from a musical, right? A Broadway
yes.
show?
Off-Broadway.
Off-Broadway.
Longest running off-Broadway show.
Okay.
Called The Fantastics.
All right. Well, here you are with, and I forgive me if I mispronounce the names. It's Johannes Weidenmüller.
That's it.
That was good.
Wow.
And Ari Hoeneck?
Yes.
Okay.
He pronounced it Hoeneck, but
Hoeneck.
With the E, it is in the German pronunciation is Weidenmüller and Hoeneck.
Well, I do like that classical music, so I'm always trying to get German right.
Oh, you got it.
Well, here's Kenny Werner and his trio with Try to Remember. Try to Remember, which is a standard tune from The Fantastics, and the first track from the album The Melody by Kenny Werner. He's joined by his longtime trio bassist Johannes Weidenmüller and drummer Ari Hoeneck. And here in the studio, it's Kenny Werner, along with Andrew Rathbun, previewing tonight's concert and tomorrow's festival. Andrew, maybe you can run down the events and some of the planning that went into this. The concert's at 8 o'clock tonight, and it features the Western Jazz Quartet with Kenny Werner.
Yes, and then the festival begins bright and early tomorrow morning. I can't remember. I think the first band starts at 8:15 a.m. and goes pretty much all morning and through mid-afternoon. And at 3 o'clock, one of our student ensembles, which is a collective band called Lush, is playing in rehearsal B from 3 to 4. And then Kenny and the Western Jazz Quartet do play a few tunes, and then Kenny's going to do a masterclass for, which is open to the public again in the Dalton Center Recital Hall. And then that evening, on Saturday evening, two of the groups from the festival are invited to play, you know, a few pieces, and then Kenny joins the jazz orchestra to close out the festival, playing, you know, four or five different selections.
That's a lot of music in a couple of days.
It's a lot of music.
The bands come in from all over the state?
Yes, they come in from this state and other states. There's some bands that come from Illinois and Indiana, and a lot of Michigan groups. And there's two different sets. There's a room that has big bands in the recital hall, and then a number of years ago, we started inviting small groups to come also to play, and they're featured in the lecture hall.
You've been involved with the Kalamazoo Youth Jazz Orchestra this year, and that's not necessarily pertinent to this festival, but it just brought
it
to
They
mind.
Are actually playing on the festival. They're presenting a little set on the festival. I can't remember what time they're playing. I actually haven't directly connected with them. I know I'm playing a concert with them in April, and they're playing one of my pieces. Actually, they asked me for something that they could play, so I sent them a piece that we're going to play.
You and your colleagues have been supportive of the idea of a youth jazz orchestra.
Yeah, and I know Scott's been visited them and Keith's working with them, and some of our graduate students have been working with them as well. So I'm looking forward to getting to play with them in a few short weeks.
So festivals like this serve a purpose. That is to set goals for the young players, show the young players some of their peers, also show audiences that jazz is a living art form that continues to inspire and produce great performers to this day.
Absolutely. And I think the thing I like the most about our festival is that it's not competitive. So we don't hand out like ribbons and trophies and, you know, that's my favorite thing. I think one of my least favorite things in the world is the music competition. I mean, I guess they serve some sort of purpose, but I've never been a huge fan of them. So that's what I really like. The directors and the groups get some feedback from different panels of judges, which they can take and hopefully incorporate into their rehearsal technique and, you know, performance practice. And it's just more, I look at it more of like a celebration than like a competition, or it really is truly a festival of jazz.
Well, back to Mr. Werner. How often would you say, I mean, I'm sure your schedule is a blend of things, including some educational components like this. How often do you attend as a guest artist something like this?
Well, there's no regularity to it. I think I've done it 4 or 5 times. Mm-hmm. And it comes up in time, you know, and it's the concept of the festival and the one guest, and, you know, I'm the guest. And a couple of times it's been with my trio, which is nice, because then you actually present a whole music that, you know, like I say, my trio becomes a 3-part, one voice. So that's been nice, too. But at Berkeley, I'm the artistic director of the Effortless Mastery Institute, which is based on the book. And that's been the last 4 years, and that's been really the center of my attention, because they're giving me the opportunity to reform some common ways of communicating this educational aspect to students and help them preserve or rediscover their voice and fearlessly let sound come out without self-editing, and just a lot of stuff that's in the book. Berkeley's really invested in me a place to institutionalize it, which is always a challenge. I can go places and I give a clinic one day, or I might spend 3 days with students and everybody comes way up, and then, you know, their egos take them back to wherever they were, you know, and now they've called my bluff. And it's, can you create courses that over a couple of semesters they can really study this and put an anchor in there to transform what they're doing? And so it's new stuff for me. It's actually new stuff, period, that I'm part of. So that's been my passion lately. But I still, when invited, mm-hmm. I go to schools, I visit, I give the message. I can work with people on what's going on in their mind that's polluting their practicing and diluting their practicing and ruining the joy of playing. I mean, even though we played last night, I found myself able to help a few students that came up to talk to me, and I know what they're going through, and you know, we started to go into it, you know, how do you get out of your own way? So I take the invitation when it's there, but I'm very involved in trying to see if I can make a place where people know this is what we're, it's not just about feeling good, it's about developing as virtuosity by removing the blocks of, at least to get as far as you can get without the way we sabotage ourselves. You know, give yourself the permission to have a great voice within you and not assume limitations and things like that. It's heady stuff, you know, but I find myself very energized by it now. That's like my current, that's where I'm going.
Is this something that is more useful for kids in their teens and 20s, or could this benefit somebody who, you know, wants to refresh their playing in their 40s?
I think it could benefit everybody, and not just musicians. You know, I think this is it's a great resource for human beings to check out, because it can help in tons of different aspects of your life, not just your musical life.
Yeah, I'm starting to take it into non-musical situations. Like, I have a workshop coming in, oh, darn, I wish I should have promoted that, in Hollyhock, Canada.
Oh.
I think it's in May. You can find it on my website. You know.
KennyWerner.com.
Right. And it's like 3 or 4 days, like what we used to do, well, you were in at Banff. But I used to do it at Banff, you know, I really, 3 or 4 days of taking people through exercises, lecture, demonstration of, and a lot of times non-musicians will come. And that's happening more and more because it's a human condition. I just started by addressing it in musicians. And so it's expanding. And I'm just kind of going with it, just like I did the first time someone asked me a question. If I don't want to presume to be anything, but if someone asks me for help and I try to be helpful, then I must be in the right place. I'm not inventing anything about myself. I'm just trying to be helpful. So, yes, it really does help. In fact, the older the musician is, the more of a shock it is to find out that they could still forgive themselves.
How much time do you spend overseas? I know that one of the projects you brought along is with the Brussels Jazz Orchestra.
Well, I used to spend a lot more time. I had a tour over there with my trio in November, December, and then I'm going back for a couple of weeks with a Danish musician, Benjamin Koppel, who I've been working with now for a lot of years. He's a great alto saxophone player, and with Peter Erskine and Johannes, actually. And I'm kind of easing out of that, but it has to happen, again, organically.
Right.
I'm not so crazy about, you know, the travel and, the performance is great, but sort of been there, done that in a weird way, you know. I mean, I don't want to, it's hard. I'm in transition. I get a real kick out of watching the veil lifted from either students or teachers. I work with teachers at Berkeley, too, because there are older teachers that have achieved quite a lot, and yet there's still something missing. And they try this first exercise, and they go, oh, gosh, how did I miss this? You know, it's really far out to see. And I'm getting a lot of energy from that, you know. So maybe it's this time in my life where I will shift over to being a vessel for other people to discover some of the great experiences I've had playing in themselves, you know, help them get to that point. A lot of people live and die, and they never really experience that, what you can experience playing music. Because it's always about, is my performance right? Is it neat? Is it, am I okay? You know, did I play well? Or, you know, sometimes you hear it talked about in a very mechanical way, and you realize some people have never tasted the nectar of being carried by the music, you know? And so I think I'm excited about helping other people have that experience.
Well, while I still have you here, I think we should let you take a break and listen to one of the big jazz orchestra pieces, perhaps, from Cantabile. That seems to beg the question, has your composition changed over time from, you know, single pieces to longer, bigger forms?
There was a period. I'm not writing much music now. I'm writing a new book, finally, and writing a lot of material that I use in presentations, or I think right now this is the thing, you know. But I did recently write a quite a lengthy orchestra piece for the Palermo Symphony played. But there was a period where I was doing a lot. Again, if I get a commission, I write a piece. That's the funny thing. One of the favorite stories Oscar Castaneves told me, he said they were interviewing Stravinsky, and the guy says, Maestro, what is your motivation for a piece? He goes, you pay me a commission, I write you a piece. Which I thought was fantastic.
It's,
you know, but then when you get in there, then you're in this process. You know, so I haven't written what it's affected my composition is that I start from random elements and I don't judge them like I don't judge my playing. And then I watch those elements come together. And only at the end will I put an intention on it that makes it look like I had that intention all along. I find out the intention way early on. I find out from it. Then I say, okay, this is what I meant all along. I really allow it to go wherever it wants to go.
What are we going to hear in the final movement of Cantabile?
Well, a lot of energy, because it's a third movement, but it's got a lot of energy, and it's got some exciting stuff in it.
the final movement to Cantabile, a jazz suite by my guest Kenny Werner. That's the Brussels Jazz Orchestra in the recording. And you're going to hear that side of Kenny as well as the more intimate, the smaller ensemble side over the next couple of days at Western Michigan University. The Western Invitational Jazz Festival starts tonight with an 8 o'clock concert in the Dalton Center Recital Hall featuring Kenny Werner and members of the Western Jazz Quartet and Scott Cowan included. And tomorrow night at 7:30 p.m. in the Dalton Center, the Western Jazz Orchestra with Kenny Werner and a couple of other special features in a public concert. Both are ticketed events. You can get tickets at the door or through the Miller Auditorium box office, 387-2300 or milleraudatorium.com. And the free events are all day long. During the day tomorrow at the Dalton Center, there will be bands set up in several rooms all performing, and there's a master class at 4 o'clock that's free to attend in the Dalton Center Recital Hall. We just have a few minutes left and a little more music to get to, I think. So time to try to wrap this up. We've had lots to talk about in terms of what you've been up to over the years, the educational components, the musical components. And what have we left for last? Maybe.
Well, I just want to say that we played with this band last night, this quintet, you know, from the largely, I guess, everybody from the school.
That would be Andrew Rathbun, Tom Knifick, Scott Cowan, and
Keith Hall,
of course.
And they play great. So not just with us, but you guys may not realize that you're that lucky to have such great musicians in your midst. And when you see they're playing somewhere, you should really go hear them, because a lot of places don't have anybody that plays that good. And I mean, I played with them last night, and I instantly felt like I fit in, meaning I felt like this is very familiar or comfortable. And, you know, so I just want to tout these great musicians.
Great. What are some of the pieces that we'll hear tonight?
Well, one is this quirkier version of the John Coltrane piece, 26-2. I wrote an arrangement called 26-2-5. You could play that, or I have an arrangement of In Your Own Sweet Way that's equally decomposed. And, you know, you could play either one of those.
Okay. Any final thoughts from you, Andrew?
Well, we're just so lucky to have Kenny here. I mean, it's sort of been an embarrassment of riches this semester with all the amazing guests we've had come through. So we're just really thrilled to have Kenny here, and his incredible musicianship and wisdom is just, you know, adds so much to our musical community. So thank you for coming.
It reminds me, Andrew, that you also have been writing in bigger forms yourself.
Yeah, I have a big band record coming out on April 20th, which I'm super excited about. That's been a long time coming. I've had a big band in New York for about 10 years, so it's finally I was able to document this music last January in New York. So look for that, April 20th.
Okay, well, maybe you'll hear about it here on WMUK. Guys, have a great concert tonight and tomorrow night, and I hope you enjoy your stay, and all the best to you, Kenny. Thank you.
Thanks for having us, Kara.
Thanks for the tea.